Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Tuesday, November 24th, 2020, Section A. Reevaluating coronavirus. Spike means Midland businesses return to 50% occupancy, by Caitlin Randall. Businesses in Midland, Ector, and Andrews counties will be required to return to 50% occupancy today because of high coronavirus hospitalizations as part of a rule in Governor Greg Abbott's executive order. Under Abbott's order, trauma service areas with COVID-19 hospitalizations above 15% of total hospital capacity for 7 consecutive days must put additional restrictions in place. The Midland-Odessa TSA has been above that threshold since November 17th. Making Monday the 7th day of hospitalizations above 15% of total capacity. Midland Health CEO and President Russell Myers said during Monday morning's City Council meeting, the restrictions will take effect at midnight. Businesses that Abbott previously allowed to open at 75% occupancy, including stores and restaurants, will go back to 50% occupancy, while bars that receive more than 51% of their sales from alcohol will be required to close, according to Abbott's order. County Judge Terry Johnson said the city and county will be releasing a joint statement tonight announcing and providing more information about the new requirements. Like Abbott's other orders related to COVID-19, the burden of enforcement will fall on local entities. Johnson said he didn't know what actions the state would take if a county doesn't enforce the state mandate, but Midland County will be following the order. This is serious, he said. Coronavirus hospitalizations at Midland Memorial Hospital have been above 15% of total capacity for several weeks and have recently been between 30 and 40% of capacity. Smaller hospitals within TSAJ that cannot care for COVID-19 patients have skewed numbers for the region. The new restrictions will be in place until COVID-19 hospitalizations in the Midland-Odessa TSA fall below the 15% threshold for 7 consecutive days. Johnson said he doesn't expect Midland and the other counties to meet that requirement anytime soon, based on comments from hospital officials about the state of coronavirus in the area. Hospital officials recently have expressed concern about the potential for a spike in cases following Thanksgiving gatherings. Dear Abby, cranky friend at work may be threat to advancement. Dear Abby, I moved to town not long before the pandemic and don't have many close friends here. One of my best friends is a coworker, Rana, whom I love dearly. Rana has had an extremely rough past, including an extensive history of parental abuse that has left her thin-skinned and suspicious of authority figures. Because of this, she's constantly butting heads with our management team and confronting them about perceived slights. While some of the points she makes are reasonable, many are taken too personally or blown way out of proportion, and she tends to act very dramatic or livid about it. I'm looking to move up in the company, and I'm torn between loyalty to my friend and the need to remain on good terms with our higher-ups. I'm also worried that my friendliness with management will lead to Rana resenting or distrusting me. How can I safely navigate? In the middle, in Colorado. Dear In the Middle, Do not involve yourself in Rana's problems on the job. If you do, they will spill over onto you. Maintain your personal relationship with her away from the office while networking and trying to widen your circle of friends. From what you have written, I doubt that Rana will be working for your employer much longer. Workers who react in a very dramatic or livid manner are usually laid off because their behavior is unprofessional and disruptive. Dear Abby, I am having problems with my baby dad helping me with our 2-year-old daughter. I don't like the idea of putting him on child support. I have tried counseling with him. In addition to asking him to step up, I have tried giving him lists of what our daughter needs, and he still isn't helping. Instead, he's asking me to help him with his bills. I don't know what to do. I really don't want to go after child support since he now has 2 jobs. I need his help, but I don't know how to get him to contribute. Any ideas? Struggling mom in Ohio. You have tried asking. You have tried counseling. The only option left is to convince him to step up to the plate and fulfill his obligations as a father, is to contact Child Support Services and ask for help. P.S. You absolutely should not pay his bills. Dear Abby, I have been asked by a close friend to officiate at his wedding. I'm honored to have been asked, and it would be easy for me to get the credentials, but I am not comfortable doing it for personal reasons. I know it's his special day and he really wants me to do it. How can I politely decline without hurting our friendship? I don't know how to word my refusal. Not for me. Dear Not, be honest to the degree that you can be without causing hurt feelings. Explain that you are honored to have been asked to officiate, which is true, but would not be comfortable in that role, also true. Then deflect by offering to support your friend in some other way on his special day. Local roundup. Confirmed COVID cases reach 7,000. The number of confirmed COVID-19 cases topped 7,000 Monday, and it is guaranteed to increase. The city reports being 14 days behind in its count, but that through November 8th, the number of confirmed cases reached 7,027. That number included 1,003 from November 1st through 8th. Taking into account the unconfirmed cases from November 9th through 22nd, the total number of cases would be 9,461. That includes 200 unconfirmed cases Friday, 77 Saturday, and 54 on Sunday. This count is reflective of the number of positive test results received from testing locations, the city reported about unconfirmed cases. The patients have been notified by the testing location of the results. However, the patients have not been contacted by the Midland Health Department yet to confirm residency, gather their close contacts, or to advise them on guidelines. As far as those confirmed cases through November 8th, there were 2,057 active cases and 4,554 people have recovered. 2 more COVID-19 related deaths were reported Monday, bringing the total to 132. City reports deaths reported this month jumps to 34. The number of COVID-19 related deaths continues its November spike. The City of Midland reported Monday that another 3 people died after being treated for COVID-19. 2 were men in their 60s. 1 died Wednesday and the other died Friday. The third man was in his 40s, who died Saturday. All were being treated at Midland Memorial Hospital and were said to have underlying health conditions. These 3 deaths bring the total over the last 9 weekdays to 29. The number of people who have this month is up to 34. The total number of COVID-19 related deaths during the pandemic is 132, according to the city. Obituaries and death notices for Tuesday, November 24th. John A. Glidewell. John A. Glidewell, 87, of Midland, passed away November 19th. Visitation will be held from 1 to 2 p.m. Wednesday, November 25th, at Nally Picklin Welch Funeral Home. Services will begin immediately thereafter. John was born July 5th, 1933, in Rankin to V.F. Arkey and Merle Glidewell. He married Mary Nell Cartwright, his high school sweetheart, in 1952. He was preceded in death by his wife, his son, Robert Lynn, his brother, Douglas Rusty Glidewell, and a sister, Maxine Jenkins. He is survived by two daughters, Vicki Jo Thompson and Karen Ann Barnes, and husband, Mark, 8 grandchildren. Live streaming of the service will be available at www.npwelch.com. In lieu of flowers, please make donations to the Scottish Rite Hospital for Children in Dallas. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Melvin Owen Penny. Melvin Owen Penny, 87, of Midland, passed away Saturday, November 21st. Services will be held at 10 a.m. Wednesday, November 25th, at Nally Picklin Welch Funeral Home Chapel in Midland. Live streaming of the service will be available at www.npwelch.com. Melvin Owen was born in 1933 in Cairns to Melvin and Leah Pearl Penny. He is survived by his son, Craig Penny, and wife, Joni, stepsons, Mike Rockwell and wife, Janice, Mark Rockwell and wife, Cheryl, and Dana Mitchell and wife, Angel, as well as many grandchildren and great-grandchildren. He was preceded in death by his father, Melvin, his mother, Leah Pearl, stepmother, Ruth, his stepbrother, Franklin Wise, former wife, Mildred Penny, and his second wife, Mamie Penny. In lieu of flowers, memorial donations may be made to St. Jude Children's Research Hospital, 501 St. Jude Place, Memphis, Tennessee, 38105. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Picklin Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com. Santiago Suarez. Santiago Suarez was born August 18th, 1976, in Stanton. Santiago is survived by his wife, Becky Suarez, daughters Zaitha Suarez, Victoria Suarez, and Cheyenne Suarez, his parents Cosme and Soledad Primera, siblings Humero Suarez and Noe Suarez. He was preceded in death by his grandparents, Modesto Sanchez Bujunda and Alicia Payan Bujunda, as well as an aunt and his father, Santiago Suarez. He's also survived by many nieces and nephews. In lieu of flowers, donations may be made to Midland Christian School Scholarship Fund. Visitation will be Monday, November 23rd, from 8 a.m. to 9 p.m. Rosary was held 7:30 Monday, November 23rd at the branch at Nally Picklin Welch Funeral Home. Funeral Mass was held Tuesday, November 24th at St. Stephen's Catholic Church. Burial followed at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com. Death notices. Albert Rodriguez Jr. Albert Rodriguez Jr., 61, of Midland, passed away November 20th. He is survived by his wife, Linda Rodriguez, children Nancy Montez, William Rodriguez, Frank Rodriguez, his mother Hazel Velarde, two sisters and four brothers. Visitation will be Tuesday, November 24th from 5 to 8 p.m., as well as Wednesday, November 25th from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. with rosary at 11 a.m. at Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home and Chapel. Della Holidi. Della Holidi, 91, of Big Spring, formerly of Midland, passed away November 21st. Visitation will be from 5 to 7 p.m. Tuesday, November 24th at Nellie Picklin Welch Funeral Home in Midland. Graveside service will be held at 1 p.m. Wednesday, November 25th at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Fabian Jacques Ray. Fabian Jacques Ray, 82, of Midland, passed away November 19th. A graveside service is set for Wednesday, November 25th at 2 p.m. at Serenity Memorial Gardens. He is survived by his wife, Cruz Carrasco, 12 children, Sylvia Ray, Otilia Ray, Eduviges Ray, Irma Avila, Jesus Ray, Nicholas Ray, Tito Ray, Inez Franco, Lucia Morales, Azucena Elizondo, Mario Ray, and Anna Maria Leva, 5 brothers, 1 sister, 34 grandchildren, 20 great-grandchildren, and numerous nieces and nephews. County to conduct out-of-the-box parade. County Commissioners Monday unanimously approved a Christmas celebration that would be presented by the Midland County Sheriff's Office December 19th at the Horseshoe Arena parking lot. The event will allow residents to drive by floats that are parked in the lot. The idea is that people would not have to congregate, get out of their vehicles, or put themselves in danger interacting with others and therefore possibly spreading COVID-19, officials said. The floats, according to officials during Monday's commissioners' court meeting, will be spaced apart, again, to encourage social distancing. Officials said they will contact the city to see if anyone who had planned to participate in the city's parade before it was canceled wants to take part in the county celebration. County Judge Terry Johnson complimented the group for thinking outside the box. Officials said it was important for mental health and other reasons that Midland County residents still be able to celebrate the holiday. City continues to take stance against approving COVID measures, by Caitlin Randall. The Midland City Council Monday continued to reject all proposals related to the enforcement of COVID-19 guidelines, even as businesses prepared to return to 50% occupancy because of a state order regarding high coronavirus hospitalizations. A proposal by Council Member Jack Ladd that would have required businesses to post signage instructing customers to wear masks or face a $500 fine failed in a 3-4 vote, with Ladd and Council Members Michael Trost and John Norman voting in favor of the ordinance, while Spencer Robnett, Scott Dufford, Lori Blong, and Mayor Patrick Payton voted against the item. The ordinance would have mandated businesses put signs on their doors asking customers to wear masks. It would not have fined businesses if customers still refused to wear face coverings. It would have been enforced through code enforcement rather than police enforcement. A resolution proposed by Norman that would have authorized police to enforce Governor Greg Abbott's statewide mask order for individuals was also not approved. That item died in a motion for lack of a second. Several people spoke in favor of and against mask mandates during the public comment section of Monday's City Council meeting. Those who spoke against the items protested in front of City Hall before the meetings, carrying signs that called council members tyrants if they passed COVID-19 measures. Midland Memorial Hospital Chief Medical Officer Dr. Larry Wilson said he was in favor of a mandate and spoke about the state of coronavirus in the area. He said Midland Memorial Hospital had 108 coronavirus patients on Monday, and 45 of those were on ventilators. Our hospital is bursting at the seams. We have to take a stance that supports controlling the spread of the disease. And as our leadership, I implore you to take a stance in that direction, he said to the council. Heather Bredemus, wife of Chief Nursing Officer Kit Bredemus, also spoke in favor of a mask mandate and criticized comments previously made by Peyton that she said downplayed the seriousness of the pandemic. She condemned a press conference Peyton held at Tall City Brewery in September before Abbott allowed bars to reopen, in which he said Midland was open for business. The mayor's speech impacted the attitudes and behaviors of many in our community, as you can see, and was the catalyst for the trajectory we find the virus on today, Bredemus said. She asked the council to approve Ladd's proposal and lead by example by wearing masks and asking their employees to wear masks. Today, I ask you, please show the same enthusiasm for saving people's lives as you did for saving their businesses, she said. Midland Police Chief Seth Herman spoke at the meeting and raised concerns about enforcement of a mask mandate, saying they were currently down 53 officers. He said their enforcement capabilities were already stretched thin, and enforcing a mandate would further exacerbate that. He also said enforcing a mask mandate may put officers in high-risk situations with those who have been adamant about their refusal to wear masks. We're going to deal with people who are resistant to it, as we've already heard. That creates consternation between the citizens and our law enforcement officers, Herman said. It could eventually lead to something very egregious, something dangerous for both groups. In addition to the other proposals, Trost had proposed a 7-point mitigation plan that included a COVID-19 task force and more testing and contact tracing. That item failed in a 2-5 vote, with Trost and Norman voting in favor of the plan. Businesses in Midland and Ector counties will return to 50% occupancy today because of high coronavirus hospitalizations as part of a rule in an executive order from Abbott. Under Abbott's order, trauma service areas with COVID-19 hospitalizations above 15% of total hospital capacity for 7 consecutive days must put additional restrictions in place. The Midland-Odessa TSA, TSAJ, has been above that threshold since November 17th, making Monday the 7th day of hospitalizations above 15% of total capacity. Opinion. Our view. Pharmaceutical company has good news for local teachers and businesses. Pfizer reported Monday that early results from its coronavirus vaccine suggests the shots may be a surprisingly 90% effective at preventing COVID-19, putting the pharmaceutical company on track to apply later this month for emergency use approval from the FDA, according to the Associated Press. That is welcome news for West Texas. Wall Street welcomes it too. The Dow shot up around 1,300 points Monday, and West Texas Intermediate spiked by about 10%. I can't imagine anyone who will not be excited. Bar owners will be happy, so will restaurateurs and other business people, and those who hate wearing masks are singing in the streets. I'm sure there will be people who won't want the vaccine. The public's health has never been important to them anyway. But the local group that probably will offer the loudest whoop will be Midland ISD's secondary leaders. Some teachers protested Friday that MISD is following the lead of other districts, including Ector County ISD, to put all students on campus 5 days a week. They need their virtual Fridays, they said. They need that time spent working on campus to plan next week's lessons, grade assignments, and take care of online academy responsibilities. Parents apparently will join the rally today. I stand with the teachers. They are right. Midland Online Academy has not lived up to former Superintendent Orlando Riddick's dream of an alternative form of education, or a reliable one to use during a pandemic. And the stories about the lack of engagement and poor academic performance are enough to make anyone wonder about the preparation that went into an online format. I also stand with Interim Superintendent Ann Dixon. I can't imagine the mess she inherited. Her goal has been to get students back on campus, which in turn will positively impact students and teachers. I am a big believer in creating a school district and education plan that is right for a community. And to this point, no one has showed that Midland Online Academy has been effective. I credit Dixon and Midland ISD leaders for ideas that bring more students back. If a student participates in an extracurricular activity, he or she needs to be back on campus. If their performance is poor, they need to be back on campus. If they take a specialized class, they need to be back on campus. Midland ISD should limit online classes to the basics that require fewer teachers for MOA, Midland Online Academy. Midland ISD should shut down its online academy when, or at least not long after, a vaccine is available for everyone. If a parent chooses not to provide the vaccine for his or her children, there are other educational options. An academic chair at Lee High School has said there is no point in Midland ISD testing students' progress because the kids are so far behind. That should tell us about the impact of COVID on our students and what it means to the future. Do I hope there is a positive outcome to this protest being launched by teachers against school district leadership? Sure. Is keeping students off campus even 20% of the time the answer? No. Sadly, it appears companies like Pfizer have the only answer because Midland Online Academy hasn't done its job. Ann Dixon knows it, the teachers know it, and now it is time for the community to know it too. Editor Stuart Doreen. Mojo Avid creates warmth for students. By Ruth Campbell. Always on the lookout for community service opportunities, Permian High School AVID Director Robin Hernandez Flores lets her students decide what projects they wanted to work on. There were three going on as of November 19th, including making fleece blankets for a blanket drive, constructing feral cat shelters, and collecting books for little free libraries around the district. The Ector County ISD Development Office is conducting a blanket drive through November 30th. The blankets will go to students who are homeless and or in foster care. Blankets can be dropped off at the Development Office, 619 West 10th, or arrangements can be made to pick them up by calling 432-456-7059. We have unique circumstances this year, Hernandez Flores said. There are several organizations that are not accepting volunteers face-to-face, but our students are so used to doing community service through our class, and they get excited about it every year. So I try to look for opportunities where they could still continue to do their community service hours, do something to help their greater community. Making blankets also was a chance for students to use their hands after being in front of a computer for 8 hours. 8 months. Hernandez Flores saw the posting about the blanket drive on social media, and the donations would be given to ECISD students. For me, that was a way of saying charity starts at home, and that was a cause that we could get behind because we knew we could be making these blankets for some of our classmates who sit in class with us, Hernandez Flores said. The students were unanimous in their interest. There are fewer students on campus due to COVID-19, but even virtual students dropped off fabric or blankets. They had the option of purchasing blankets, but decided to make them from fleece instead. As of early Thursday afternoon, in only 2 days, there were 20 blankets and students working on 3 others. The effort ended Friday. The goal was to make 50. Adelena Hernandez, a sophomore who will turn 16 next month, and Cheha Kim, a 15-year-old freshman, were glad to be helping other people. "I'm glad that I can help whoever needs help. That makes me happy," Kim said. Hernandez said the project has brought them together as an AVID family. AVID, or Advancement Via Individual Determination, helps prepare students for the post-secondary world by teaching organizational, time management, and note-taking skills, among others. Francisco Ayon, a 16-year-old junior, said he feels good giving to others. "It's important to help your classmates or the people you know," he said. Hernandez Flores, the AVID director, said 9th through 12th grade students decided to collect books for the little free libraries across ECISD, and freshmen opted to make feral cat shelters out of buckets. "We have quite a few who call Permian home, and so we'd like to provide shelter for them for the winter months where they'll be able to find some warmth, and they're in the process of making automatic feeders for them as well," Hernandez Flores said. As to the little free libraries, she said every school has one, including Permian. "Because the holidays are coming up, we felt as if the students would be depending more on those little free libraries to get some books that they would be able to take home. Literacy is so important, and we know at the high school level that if they fall in love with reading in the elementary level or pre-K or whatever in the lower level, then they are more likely to continue with that. And you can do so much with a book in your hand. Literacy opens doors to endless possibilities." So we want to make sure that the students are provided with every opportunity to enhance their literacy, Hernandez Flores said. The Education Foundation, she said, does a wonderful job of keeping the little free libraries stocked. "However, everybody could use a little help, and our students took the initiative on this one as well. Students decided to donate their own children's books from home, and others who didn't have books went on Amazon with Hernandez Flores and found books that were age appropriate and culturally relevant to stock the libraries with. Some students took children's books they hadn't read before home with them and brought them back." Celeste Potter, director of the Development Office and the Education Foundation, said the Bookworms Literacy Program, where community members went into schools to read to children, has gone virtual. The program is aimed at pre-K through first grade students. "There are about 7,000 kids in that cohort," Potter said. "They each get a brand new book every month that they get to take home and keep. Last year, we had members of the community going in and reading those stories, but we can't do that this year. So I'm recording members of the community reading the story. In everyone's book, there's a QR code so the teachers and even the parents can scan that QR code, and it takes them to a safe site through ECISD, where they watch the member of the community reading the story. They can also download additional materials to go along with the story, whether it's a coloring sheet, a word search, whatever is age appropriate for the story. We've also introduced a reading incentive, so kids in kindergarten through fifth grade, through that program, if they read 8 books and then log them on the back of a bookmark and turn that back, they get an incentive. We're just trying to find as many ways as we can to incentivize these students to read. We've also been able to, with help from Complex Community Federal Credit Union, to ensure that every elementary school has a little free library. And as of today, November 16th, all but three of them are actually up and functioning. We're in the process of getting them all mapped. I've been working with Ector County Library. They have a volunteer who's been going out to every location and mapping them on Google Maps. Then we're also working with littlefreelibrary.org to get them on their national registry. So that's another way for kids to have access to books, especially if we have to do another shutdown and the library is closed, Potter said. She added that her department goes around every month to make sure the little free libraries are clean, filled with the right kind of books, and any debris is removed. Potter said the schools take care of the libraries between Education Foundation visits. Having undergone a strategic plan, Potter said the Education Foundation is looking for more ways to help with literacy. I actually have more volunteers than I have books to read. We just finished our book inventory this weekend, November 14th and 15th. So if I have some bonus books, I'm actually looking to see what I can do with that. But I'm imagining for safety, we may have to do this even through next year. Even if for whatever reason, everything is sunshine and rainbows and we can go back in the schools, I really think I'll keep the virtual part as a component for when those kids come home, she said. What if a kid comes home and mom or dad can't read, or they can't read in English? This is another avenue for the kid to get some additional support while they're at home, Potter said. The Economist, The Big One, by M. Ray Perryman, head of the Perryman Group. A new trade agreement covering about 30% of the global economy has been signed. The Regional Comprehensive Economic Partnership, RCEP, includes China, Japan, South Korea, New Zealand, Australia, and 10 Southeast Asian economies. It is the world's largest in terms of the amount of gross product covered, slightly above the U.S.-Mexico-Canada agreement, USMCA, according to most estimates. About 2.1 billion people reside in member nations. India is not in the deal at this point, but can join at a later date. It's been a long time in the making, with negotiations dragging on for about 8 years. With the coronavirus pandemic causing economic dislocations worldwide, however, there was an even greater incentive to get it done, though member nations still have to ratify it. In addition, the agreement may help China, Japan, and South Korea reach a free trade agreement. They've been struggling for years to work through barriers and reach an accord. Although clearly a landmark in terms of the proportion of the world economy which is covered, tariffs among most of these nations were already low or non-existent. While further reductions will clearly enhance growth prospects, they will be phased in over time, and the starting points are generally not that high. Unlike more comprehensive trade agreements, which attempt to reduce a variety of barriers to free trade, the primary goal of the RCEP is to reduce tariffs. In fact, some observers note that from China's perspective, it is particularly attractive in that it is narrowly focused on tariffs rather than other issues. The agreement touches on intellectual property, but environmental protections and labor rights are not addressed. Free trade is good for the economy. It can help open markets, strengthen supply chains, and enhance economic growth. This basic fact of economics has been proven over centuries. The increased Chinese influence may prove to be detrimental to the ability of the U.S. to compete in the region. This outcome was largely preordained when the U.S. pulled out of the Trans-Pacific Partnership negotiations in early 2017, but may be reversed through future policy shifts. And as an illustration of the potential magnitude of a major trade deal, we analyzed the benefits to the United States having the USMCA in place and found that it leads to an additional $64.9 billion in gross product and almost 600,900 jobs compared to trading under the terms that would otherwise be in place, including multiplier effects. While the RCEP is not as comprehensive as the USMCA, it will nonetheless yield benefits to all member nations. Odessans Give Back with Free Meals by Michael Bauer. Thanksgiving will have a different setting for most people this year due to the COVID-19 pandemic. However, some are aiming to continue their annual tradition of offering free Thanksgiving meals in some form or another. For curbside bistro owner Alejandro Barrientos, he and his wife Stephanie still plan on having their annual free Thanksgiving lunch this year. This will be the sixth straight year that curbside bistro hosts a free Thanksgiving lunch. It will take place from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. or when the food runs out at 3816 Andrews Highway. "I'm hoping a lot more people show up this year," Barrientos said. "Usually we do about 500 and 600 guests. This year we're shooting for about 800 and 1,000 guests. Because of the economy and being negatively affected by the coronavirus, many businesses have closed this year, and that has led to an increased number of people becoming unemployed, and that is the reason why Barrientos expects to have more guests at this year's lunch. People are out of jobs, and when you stop and think about it, Thanksgiving is a luxury meal," he said. "Not everybody is going to have enough for a meal, especially those who haven't gotten paid or have to pay bills." While Curbside Bistro plans on having people attend, they will also have to-go plates this year and will be practicing social distancing to keep everyone safe. "We're going to have our patio opened because we're doing this to help our community. We don't want to endanger our community. All the volunteers have been amazing." For Barrientos, being able to put on this event this year has been even more crucial than in the past. "I think that this year, more than any other year, we've been through a lot of trial and tribulations as a community and everything, and we still have a lot more to be thankful for. We have a lot more to be positive for. We're just blessed. We're surviving. We have our loved ones. You see that throughout the Odessa and Midland area as people are helping out each other." Barrientos said the preparation for the event takes about 3 days and a month full of planning. They'll cook anywhere between 25 and 30 turkeys. The meal also includes ham, green bean casserole, stuffing, corn, mashed potatoes, and a dessert. "Anyone who's ever cooked Thanksgiving for their family knows just how frustrating it can be," Barrientos said. "Imagine that times 500 people. We start calling our local vendors and local suppliers. We start calling them and seeing what they can donate, and the people who donate the turkeys and get a head count. Another organization that will be providing a free Thanksgiving meal, albeit in a different setting, is the Odessa Salvation Army. From 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Thanksgiving Day, the Odessa Salvation Army will be providing to-go meals in a drive-through setting at its location at 810 East 11th. Usually in the past, the Odessa Salvation Army has hosted a free Thanksgiving meal at its location, but because of COVID and to keep everyone safe, Captain Clara Gomez said that they will only be handing out food instead. We're going to have volunteers and we'll be serving food and preparing it in to-go plates, Gomez said. We're going to ask them how many plates they need and go that way. While Clara and her husband Juan are both happy to be able to put on this year's event, they added that it is a struggle not to see everyone face to face. One of the biggest struggles that we're seeing this year is that we're so used to community, Clara Gomez said. Our doors are open every day, but that's one of the days where we see people come in from all different walks of life, from the homeless to the elderly, to those who are just coming in and sitting with someone. It'll be tough this year to have that Thanksgiving spirit with their to-go plates. It's a little heartbreaking for us because the holidays are one of the things that we look forward to, and it's going to look a little different for us. While many Thanksgiving luncheons have been canceled around the area this year because of the pandemic, it doesn't eliminate the fact that this year, the need to be there for people is also important for the Salvation Army. It's not just about feeding, it's about seeing people and the thankful spirit, she added. We only see half the face now. We don't see the whole face because everyone's wearing a mask. It's important for us to continue to serve, even in the capacity that's way out of our hands. We're trying to keep it as normal as possible, even though it is what it is. Regardless of the setting, this Thanksgiving is still a time to reflect on everything and to count blessings, Juan Gomez said. The fantastic thing about Thanksgiving is that you're just focused on nothing else other than the thankfulness that you have to be with family and friends, he said. During a year like this, that's really important. It's one of those things that really come to light about how blessed we are. Curbside Bistro, 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. or whenever they run out of food, Thursday. 3816 Andrews Highway. Salvation Army, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Thursday, 810 East 11th. How to donate, https://www.salvationarmytexas.org/ways-to-give/. It will take place from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. or when the food runs out at 3816 Andrews Highway. Breaking Bread Ministry, 5 to 6:30 p.m. Thursday, 410 East Florida in Midland. Jesus House, Season of Warmth Luncheon, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Wednesday. Jesus House, Odessa, 1335 East 6th. Online, tinyurl.com/y3tkew9d. Vaccine Distribution Not Entirely Clear by Federico Martinez. Despite promises by federal and state government leaders that vaccines and medications to treat COVID-19 are on their way, health officials in Ector County warn it could be at least 1 to 2 more months before the treatments are available to the public. One vaccine is still awaiting final approval from the U.S. Food and Drug Administration, and most local health care related facilities lack freezer units large and powerful enough to store the vaccines, said Ector County Judge Debbie Hayes. Questions also remain about how and when communities will receive the vaccines and medicine. Everyone is very optimistic and ready to go, Hayes said. But as far as I know, Medical Center Hospital and the County Health Department are the only ones who already have the sub-zero freezers needed. It's going to require additional costs to make sure other hospitals healthcare facilities and pharmacies have freezers so that they can help distribute the vaccines. MCH CEO Russell Tippin said, local health officials do know that the vaccines will be distributed in stages. The first round of vaccines will be given to frontline medical staff, such as doctors and nurses. The second round will go to the most vulnerable, the elderly, people living in nursing homes, and educators. In terms of numbers in Ector County, that's a lot of people, Hayes said. It's going to take time for everyone to get the vaccines. In order to provide the vaccinations to as many people as quickly as possible, health officials will be counting on the help of local pharmacies, Hayes and Tippin said. Pharmacist Brian Meyer, the owner of Odessa's Sunflower Rx, recently submitted his paperwork so that he will be able to provide the vaccine to the public, but he too says details still need to be worked out. We just submitted our application to be a place where people can go to get the vaccination, he said, but most pharmacies, including chains like Walgreens and CVS, don't have the large refrigeration units that will be needed. I'm not sure if the government is going to lease freezers to us, help us buy them, or how it's going to work. We're all waiting to learn more about how this will work. Governor Greg Abbott recently announced that Texas is ready to swiftly distribute medicines and vaccinations to treat COVID-19, a similar vow made by other state governors, but that news was announced with little detail. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration, FDA, recently authorized the immediate use of the first medical treatment developed for people who contract COVID-19. An antibody drug by Eli Lilly and Company called bamlanivimab has been shown to improve the symptoms of people who contract the virus and prevent hospitalizations, according to a press release issued by the governor's office. The FDA said the drug is authorized for patients at high risk of progressing to severe COVID-19, including people 65 and older, or who have certain pre-existing medical conditions. Lilly is expected to immediately ship approximately 80,000 doses across the country, including Texas, at no cost to the states. Lilly should have up to 1 million doses by the end of the year. Similar to the Lilly antibody treatment, Regeneron Pharmaceuticals Incorporated also has requested FDA emergency use authorization of its own COVID-19 antibody medical treatment to treat patients before they become seriously ill and aid in reducing hospitalizations. According to Abbott's press release, the federal government has agreed to buy hundreds of thousands of doses of the two new treatment drugs and will be in charge of allocating supplies to the states, which will in turn determine distribution to hospitals and healthcare facilities. It is likely that the doses will be allocated to states and U.S. territories based on their share of hospitalized and infected patients. Meyer said the current plan is for healthcare facilities like MCH and Odessa Regional Medical Center to receive the first shipments of the COVID medication and vaccinations. Sunflower and other pharmacies will be the second group to receive the supplies. Sunflower is one of more than 5,000 independently owned pharmacies across the country that is overseen by the national chain known as Health Mart Pharmacy. The federal government has contracted with Health Mart Pharmacy to organize the medical distribution to pharmacies, Meyer said. That's how I learned about it, he said. Even though we're a small pharmacy, we want to help get the vaccines to the public. We want to be a healthcare provider that offers services instead of just counting pills. State Representative Brooks Landgraf said, although distribution has not yet started, the announcement is cause to celebrate. It has been a breath of fresh air to learn about the effectiveness of the Pfizer and Moderna vaccines, Landgraf said. The fact that we are seriously talking about distributing a vaccine nationwide less than a year after the first documented COVID case is a testament to the integrity and willpower of the American people. ECISD to get rapid COVID tests. Ector County ISD next week will receive 10,000 self-administered COVID-19 rapid tests. Superintendent Scott Murray made the announcement during Thursday night's ECISD live broadcast. The state of Texas last week announced an opportunity for school districts to incorporate testing, and we volunteered for that opportunity. So next week, ECISD will receive 10,000 COVID-19 rapid tests. And these tests are pretty interesting. It's a brand new test, Murray said. You actually administer the test yourself if you're an adult or a high school student. It's a nasal swab, but not quite like the PCR tests that are used in our hospitals, so it's not as invasive as some of the other tests. He said the accuracy rate is 97%. We are very excited about this test. It is a quick test, which means you get your results in 3 to 15 minutes. Again, next week, we will have those tests, and we're going to start phasing in our usage of those tests. The first group of people that we will start with will be our staff members. So any staff member during the day that demonstrates any symptoms, any COVID-19 symptoms, those staff members will have an opportunity to take that test, administer it themselves, and then within just a few minutes, we'll have the results of those tests and we'll follow up appropriately, Murray said. If a staff member tests positive, they will be sent home to quarantine. If they are negative, they may still be sent home if they aren't feeling well, but at least we'll know that it's not COVID-19. Once we are comfortable with the process with staff members, we will begin to transition into students. So during the school day, any student who displays COVID-19 symptoms, we will have that testing opportunity available for kids. And we will need, of course, parent permission. Parents will be notified, and if the child displays symptoms, the parent will be asked if they would like their child to be tested at school. They will know in just a few minutes if the test is positive, and they can respond immediately to that, Murray said. We're excited about this testing opportunity, he added. We know that it will help us become more focused in dealing with the outbreak that is occurring in our community. Then all of those results will be reported to our health department. We will report those results on the ECISD dashboard as well. Dear Abby, holidays this year inspire thinking outside the gift box. Dear Abby, with the holidays fast approaching, I'm starting to think about shopping. Honestly, I'm tired of shopping for adults who don't need anything. Finding gifts for them becomes more daunting each year. I think gift cards and direct money are tacky Christmas presents. Do you think it would be odd to ask my adult children and other family members to select a charity they would like me to donate to instead of buying them gifts that just take up more room? This year has been hard on many people financially, but most of my family members are lucky enough to still be working through everything that has happened. I think charities could use a boost. New idea in Florida. Dear New Idea, I am sure they could. Your idea is terrific, and it reminded me of a letter I printed many years ago, which I have edited because of space limitations. Read on. Dear Abby, like many families, we have wrestled with the what do we get for people who have everything dilemma. Last year, our family finally hit upon a solution. We discussed it with our grandparents. They agreed it would be more charitable for us to give something to people who lack everyday necessities, so we adopted a battered children's shelter. Those little ones are truly refugees. They need everything from toothbrushes and hairbrushes to baby formula and diapers, not to mention toys and games. To our delight, our neighbors got involved in our project too. For weeks on Thursdays, neighbors would leave donations in a sack by their mailbox, and we would pick them up. Our goal was for every child in that shelter to wake up on Christmas morning to find packages of necessities and a few playthings. The project created so much excitement among our neighbors that we collected enough for two shelters. There were pillows, socks, underwear, bath products, cold medicines, books, towels, baby clothes, etc. Each child also got a large gift basket, including a non-breakable tree ornament to help him or her remember this holiday. The cost was small when spread over so many families, but the rewards couldn't have been greater. We felt our project embodied the true spirit of Christmas. It sensitized our children to the needs of others all year long. Because it was one of the best holidays we have ever had, we're repeating the drive again this year. When people join together, everyone can make a difference. Santa's Helpers in Phoenix. Dear Santa's Helpers, your signature describes you fittingly. With that in mind, I hope readers will be sensitive to the needs of charities in their local communities this year. Because monies that would have ordinarily been donated to local charities may have been diverted in other directions, many charities are having difficulty raising enough to meet their budgets. Remember, folks, charity begins at home, and by that I mean the communities in which you dwell.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.